I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. Together we're the functional nerds.
And John, oh, do you hear that? I think something's wrong with my audio. I should go back to bed.
Oh, no, I think it's fine. It's all good. Patrick just woke up. so we're starting a little bit late today, but no big deal. Hope everyone's doing well out there. Today, we are joined by Jamie Todd Rubin. Jamie's a writer. He's a coder. He's a project manager. He also writes an excellent blog. You go to jbrubin.net. I'm a big fan of Jamie's blog, and we've had Jamie on the show before, and he's written some great posts lately, which was one of the reasons I wanted to get on the show. Jamie, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you guys for having me. This is like old times.
I know. You know, it's so funny how we go back to this. We were talking before we started recording today, and you know, Patrick and I, well, I don't go to cons nearly as much as I used to. Not that I ever went to them a lot, but I was like, Jamie, did we meet in person at Balticon? He's like, yeah, we met for a beer at Balticon 6 years ago or whatever it was. And so time goes fast. It doesn't seem like it was that long ago, but it was. And Jamie, like I said, I noticed that, well, I've really enjoyed a lot of the articles you've written lately on your blog, but I feel like you had maybe taken a little bit of a break from your blog. Like, I feel like I didn't see a lot in the feed for a while, and then recently I've seen you kind of post more regularly. Am I accurate in that assessment?
Yeah, that's right. So I have three kids, and my youngest is two, and right around 2 years ago, you probably would have seen things kind of peter off for a bit. I found that, you know, the little bits of time I had to do writing, any kind of writing, vanished when that third one came along. So I've just recently started getting back into it. And really, I've been doing a lot of reading. I've been trying to read a lot more lately. And I decided maybe what I would do is write about reading, not necessarily reviews or anything like that, but just about things that what I read make me think about. So that's what you've been seeing.
And that's where my head has been at for the past 2 years or so as well. I haven't been really writing about it at all, but as I mentioned on the show quite a few times, most of my reading these days is nonfiction, and I think as is yours at this point. And I really try to get as much out of it as possible, and I have all sorts of ways that I do that. And it seems like you have different ways to do it, seems to be on a similar course. And when we get to the main part of the show today, I would certainly like to dig deep into that. Before we do any of that, I want to take a moment to thank everybody who supports our show. And the way that you can do that, and the way that most people do that, is by going over to patreon.com/functionalnerds. And we'd like to thank everybody that's already backing us, whether it be $1 a month, a couple bucks a month, $5 a month. All of it helps put this show out every week, or just about every week. Once in a while, we miss a week here and there. But thank you, everybody that's already backing us. And to those of you who are listeners who aren't backers, consider becoming one. It really helps. Hopefully you're getting some sort of value out of the show, whether it's hearing some insight from one of our guests like Jamie, or perhaps a recommendation that one of us makes that you ended up enjoying or getting something out of. If you get value out of the show, consider backing it, because it'll help us keep putting it out. So once again, that is patreon.com/functionalnerds. And now let's get on to our picks of the week.
Picks of the week.
Jamie, do you have a pick of the week ready to go, or do you need a minute?
No, I think I've got it. So I grew up in LA, I'm often attracted to things by the words in the title. So years and years ago, I saw something called The Da Vinci Code, and I was like, oh, that sounds interesting, you know, Da Vinci and Code. Recently, I was skimming through something. I don't remember exactly where, but I saw a book called The Library Book by Susan Orlean. And I was like, oh, that looks interesting. It's got the word library and it's got the word book in it. Turned out to be a really great book. It's centered around the Los Angeles Public Library, Central Library fire in 1986, which I had no idea happened, and I was living there in 1986. But it sort of centers around that, and it's really what it is. It's a great history of the LA public library system and libraries in general. It was really, really great book.
That is interesting. I've seen that one pop up on Amazon, like as like best nonfiction of the past month or what have you. And I've seen it come up on several lists lately, and I've been kind of curious about it, but I did not dig deep into it. So it ends up becoming sort of a history of that particular library or libraries in general.
Well, it's the story of the fire, but it's told kind of through the history of the LA public library system, way back from its origins to the present. And kind of, it was kind of a nostalgic in a way, because a lot of the branches they mentioned the Studio City branch in there. I lived right near that branch, and I would go to that branch. The branch that I went to most was the Granada Hills branch of the LA public library. But it just, you know, it not only talked about the history, but it talked about, you know, how they do things, how they move books from library to library when they have interlibrary loans. And they also talked about the fire and how they investigated it and how much damage it did and, you know, what lessons they learned from it and all that. So really, I mean, I was surprised. I had no idea about the book when I saw it. And then, like I said, I was attracted by those words, library and book, and it turned out to be really good.
Cool. I will put that on my list because that sounds like something that I would definitely be interested in. So it's called The Library Book. And can you give the author?
Yeah, it's Susan Orlean. And I believe it's put out by Simon & Schuster.
Nice. All right. Well, that will go on my to read list for sure. My pick this week is also a book. I actually listened to it as an audiobook on Audible, but I liked it so much that I actually went and ordered the physical copy as well, because I want to take notes on it, because it really was that good for me. And it is a book. The author's name is Gary Taubes, T-A-U-B-E-S. And the book is Why We Get Fat and What to Do About It. This book essentially is the science, and I just read it, but it's the science behind the diet that I've been following for 5 years. It's not related specifically to my specific diet, but it's essentially the, hey man, carbs make you fat, which, you know, is not earth-shattering news, but it really gets into the science of it. Also talking about how it's really an interesting science book and medical book, and how we eventually got to the point where in the 1950s and 60s, the recommendation was, you know, cut the fat out of your diet and, you know, try to eat less calories and, you know, eat a lot of carbohydrates. How that became not only accepted, but where all the government agencies and health organizations got behind recommending that diet, and how now looking back at it, maybe that wasn't such a good idea, and maybe they shouldn't have recommended that diet because we have such problems with obesity and diabetes and all of that kind of stuff now. So it's a very interesting book going back to scientific studies from years and years ago, and how, I mean, I guess this is the way with science, and Jamie, I know you read pretty widely and I'm sure you've read some science books, but science is interesting because as much as we try to use the scientific method and to go about truth, unfortunately scientists are human too, and if they have their hypotheses and they are trying to prove it, what happens is they, you know, put emphasis on data that backs up their point, and they tend to ignore the data that goes against their hypotheses. And that's kind of what this book is saying, is that there was a lot of that going on, of like ignoring certain studies and all that kind of stuff. So if you do this kind of diet or are interested in it, or are just someone that finds science books like this kind of interesting, I think it's just a very good read, and it was a good audio book too. So once again, it's Why We Get Fat and What to Do About It by Gary Taubes. So that is my pick this week. Patrick, what is yours?
So years ago, I actually have two. Years ago, okay, I gave Evernote a second chance because of Jamie. Because I had used Evernote previously and I really didn't like it, and I was having problems with it, and I just walked away from it. And then I read a couple of his blog posts, I think, talking about organization and how he was doing stuff. And Evernote was one of the things that I believe he was using at the time. I don't know if he still does.
I do.
He does. And based on his blog post about how he organizes his Evernote and how he uses it, I gave it another shot, and I'm still using it today. I still don't pay for it.
Mm.
I don't know if you pay for it, Jamie.
I do. I don't use it to the extent that I did when I was writing those posts because, I mean, that was more for me a kind of an experiment. How paperless is it possible for me to be? And since then, I've shifted from let's see what the extreme is back to something that's more of a balance for me. But I do pay for it. I do use it for things like I use File This, which is a service you can use for having all of your statements and stuff automatically sent to Evernote. So I don't have to worry about scanning that stuff in. And that's mostly that kind of thing is mostly what I use it for these days.
Interesting.
Back up for a second. Can you please? I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
You're appealing to my self-interest, Jamie. Can you, and Patrick, I want you to get back to describing your Evernote pick, but can you explain that service a little bit? Because that sounds like something I would be very interested
in. Yeah, there's a service out there called File This. I think it's filethis.com. A free version, a premium version, I can't remember, but the version that I use, you can have up to a certain number of services per month, and I think mine is like 30 or something. And basically, they have integrations with hundreds and hundreds of institutions. Now, you know, it banks, it can be services like your local gas company or your local electric company or retirement places, payroll places, and you go through this like little synchronization process. And then it automatically, on a daily basis, checks to see if there's any new statements or documents, and it downloads them and it sends them into Evernote automatically.
So instead of getting this stuff mailed to you as paper and then you scanning it and putting it into Evernote, these companies will actually send all that stuff to Evernote through File
Yep.
This.
Well, yeah, it basically goes in through different, their different web services that they have and pulls those statements out, and then they come in as PDFs.
That is something that I would like to look into because we are horrible at organizing this stuff. And as I suspect many families and couples are, there is, not 100%, agreement on how this stuff should be organized, and perhaps in certain areas one person is a little more organized than the other, and there's arguments on like, well, this is how I want to do it, and because I'm more of a let's just get everything as digital as possible so we don't have all these papers around, and my wife is more on the end that like, oh, I need the security of like having it in my hands, and I'm like, and then it's like, yeah, but then it's just all over the place and we can't find anything anyway. So but that would be if that skips the step of actually having to scan it. Ooh, that is something to look into. So
anyway, I, for one, would like to put out an apology to John's wife for what's about to happen in her household.
Well, I'll look into it. I'm not saying this is going to be tomorrow or something, but I did not know that such a thing could even exist.
Yeah, we're in
trouble. That's pretty nice.
We're in trouble.
It could be. Yeah, well, hey, if it makes our life easier. But anyway, Patrick, why don't you go ahead?
Use Evernote. I use it for different things. It's kind of funny because at work, they push us to use Asana. And I don't like taking notes in Asana. So I still tend to use my Evernote. And then I sort of flip things from Evernote to Asana. Anyway, so I still use Evernote thanks to Jamie and his tutoring years ago. So that's pick number one. Pick number two I'm going to throw out there is rvshare.com.
Okay.
And if you're familiar with sites like Airbnb, rvshare.com is similar, except it's where you can rent an RV from someone. So people who have RVs, they can list their RVs on the site, and the site itself takes care of all the stuff like contracts between you and insurance and safety deposits and security deposits and payments and all that kind of stuff. But you basically you can search for an RV that you want to rent if you've ever wanted to do something like that. And they have everything from little trucks with a camper on the back all the way up to the big class C kind of stuff on there. And you can find one in your area. You can see what the owner wants to charge to rent that. You can see if it's available. You can book it right there on the site. And then it creates a little chat, basically, back and forth between you and the owner. They recommend that you don't, you know, go outside the system, obviously. The system's not going to want you to go outside and chat with the owner. But you just basically go back and forth, figure out if for sure you want to do this, and then you just book everything right there in the site. At that point, it gives you an address where you can pick up the RV. You go pick it up. You do a walkthrough with the owner. They give you all this kind of paperwork to go through. Make sure, you know, you check this, check that. Look for any kind of visual damage, just like you're renting a car at a enterprise or something like that. And then they hand you the keys and you drive off. And you have rented an RV. It's a very interesting experience, and it's a way for people to kind of play with an RV if they've never, without having to spend, you know, thousands, if not tens or hundreds of thousands of dollars to buy one.
That's really cool. Mm-hmm. It makes sense too. So like RV B&B.
Yeah, essentially. RVshare.com. You just put in your city, your zip code, and it finds any RVs near you that are for rent.
That's really cool. Mm-hmm. That's really cool. I will just share a quick little thing that last weekend I used Uber for the first time ever. And I had to sell my wife on that too. Boy, it seems like I'm just always trying to convince her to do stuff that she doesn't want to do. It's not, we don't have that kind of a relationship. I'm nagging her constantly. But we were going to, into the town we live in, we were going to a friend's birthday party that was at a bar in town. And I'm like, look, this is a 5-minute Uber ride. This is a perfect opportunity to use it. Like, why don't we try it? Like, let's try it. So I did convince her, and it was great. It was really good. You know, she was afraid, like, oh, but what if the driver's an axe murderer? And I'm like, it's probably not. But very easy. Like, I was surprised with how easy it was to use, and it was great. I would definitely use it again. I know it's a different service, but, and I'm sure 90% of our listeners are like, wow, you're finding out about Uber now, John? Like, this is a new thing for you. But I guess depending on where you live and your needs, you may never use a service like that. But if you were on the fence about using it, I recommend it. It was great. Really easy to use. Same idea. But there we go. Uber. Jamie, back to him now. You, like I said, one of the reasons I wanted to get you on the show is because I have been reading your recent posts. And the one that really stood out to me is you wrote this post called The Butterfly Effect of Reading. And I realize this is kind of, because it talks about book recommendations, and I realize we're about to be hypocritical because you and I both just made book recommendations. But tell us about how you would describe this idea of the butterfly effect of reading.
So this is, it's sort of probably something I've been doing for a long time and never really thought of it in these terms until I wrote the post. But the idea is that I am, reading for me is sort of my continuing education. I feel like, you know, by the time I graduated from college, I had all the tools I needed to begin to learn. And then of course I went out and got a job, and, you know, the formal education stops there. So reading for me is sort of the continuing education. And it's, when I was a kid, I used to go to the library and just kind of wander around and find things. And the butterfly effect for me is how reading something often leads to something else. And if you kind of look back through the trail that you've gone, you realize, hey, I started with, you know, this one thing here and ended up way over here. And how did I get there? And it's, it's really my preferred method for what I decide to read next. And it's got pros and cons to it, but I'm not a big fan of the, you know, and I fully understand the irony here, but I'm not a big fan of the, you know, hey, you should read. When somebody comes up to me and says, hey, you should read this, because they know I'm a reader, I'm kind of like, oh no. It's like when somebody comes up to me and says, oh, you're a science fiction writer, you should see this movie. I'm not a big science fiction movie fan. So it's more of a way of, you know, probably, you know, the best way to do it is to give an example. I was reading a biography of Eisenhower, President Eisenhower, a couple months back. It's not the first one I've read. But I tend to circle back to presidential biographies every now and then. And it got me thinking about, wow, the 50s sound like an interesting time. I'd like to know more about that. And I discovered a book by David Halberstam called the 50s. Very, very, very clever name there. And that just had a wealth of things that I discovered in it. The book was great. I mean, it was sort of all sorts of aspects of the 1950s culture, political stuff. It talked about the development of McDonald's and, Holiday Inns. But it also talked about the books and other things that were written during that time. There's The Man in the Gray Flannel Suit was one of the books that came out of that era and was mentioned in that book that I ended up reading afterwards. It's by Sloan Wilson. And it's about a guy who, has a corporate job and goes into the office every day and kind of is like, what am I doing? I'm in this rat race. And it's a lot of it resonated with how I feel. And so it was kind of interesting to see that that's still going on. That led to Peyton Place, which is a famous book that came out of the 1950s by Grace Natalia. So it's that, you start on one topic and you find yourself drifting to other things and getting farther and farther away, but sort of starting from this one flapping of the wings. And that's sort of where the butterfly effect comes in.
Now, let me ask you this. Do you then reread some books that maybe you sort of, as you say, you kind of go through your trail? Let's say you start on one book, then 10 to 20 books later, you're like, well, I think this book is the one that kind of got the ball rolling in this general area. I want to go back and read that book now after reading these other books. Do you ever do that?
I do. Not as frequently as maybe I should. I there are times when I do go back and reread. I remember so that happened with The Making of the Atomic Bomb by Richard Rhodes. I read that book and I thought it was just, the science in it, the history of it, it was all fascinating. And it led to some other things. And it got me thinking, half a year later when I was reading some other book, there's all these self-help books and are a big thing. And there's all these books about how to, in my day job, I'm a project manager. There's all these books about how to be a good project manager and how to run projects and all this stuff. But it's turns out that a book like The Making of the Atomic Bomb is really a great practical guide to managing a big project. And I went back and read it with the thought that, okay, what can I take out of this in terms of project management?
Mm. Yeah, I have found I never reread ever. My whole thought was, why would I reread a book? There's so many books that I want to get to. Why would I waste time rereading a book I already read? But now that I take notes on the books and have this whole system for how to really extract lessons and information out of these books, I have reread things in the past 6 months to do just that. It's like, I read that book 5 years ago. I knew it meant something to me to read that. And I feel like I got something out of it, but I couldn't tell you what those lessons are because I didn't take notes on it. So that has been the case. And I just started rereading a book that I read about 4 years ago now. And it was the first book that I read that sort of mentioned Stoic philosophy, which I've gotten very into in the past couple of years. And now I've read a lot of the original sources. And I find myself, I just went back to this book and started reading it the other day. Now reading it after reading a lot of the original sources, after reading a lot of authors that I know influenced the author who wrote this original book that I read, I'm getting a lot more out of it because I'm taking notes, but also because it's like, I see where he got this idea because now I read that other book. And so it's a way to, I think, really solidify your understanding and your knowledge to go back and reread these books. So for me, I've totally changed my tune about doing that kind of thing.
And you mentioned taking notes. The funny thing about that is, so in 2013 is when I really started listening to, I thought I'd give audiobooks a try and I just sort of took off from there. And my preferred method is audiobooks these days, mainly because I've worked my way up to 1.75 speed, or the book that I'm listening to now, even 2.0. I can read them, get through them a lot faster. I can do them while I'm doing other things. But what is really problematic for me about audiobooks is the note taking, because I am a note taker and I don't like how Audible does its clips. So what I often do is I will often buy either the print book or the ebook and in, you know, I prefer the print because I'm a underliner. I write in the margins. I do all that kind of stuff. I know that somebody like John DiNardo is going to have a cow now that I said I write in my books.
Well, I'm sitting here freaking out. My skin is crawling. The hairs are sticking straight up.
But when you think about it, I've told my kids too, I mean, you know, as long as it's your book, make it yours, right? You know, make it what you put in it takes, you know, it's, you're having a conversation with the author in a way. And so what I'll do oftentimes is I'll sit there when I'm not, you know, driving or you know, doing something like chores around the house and listening to an audiobook. But if I'm just sitting listening to the audiobook and I have the book in front of me, I'll just be following along and taking notes and underlining and writing in the margins and all that. And then later I'll go back and put those notes in a text file so that I can at least, you know, find them more easily if I need them. But I'm a big believer in, particularly as part of the sort of the continuing education aspect of my reading, of marking up books and taking lots of notes and, you know, making them your own that way.
I agree. And one thing I would recommend that I have done with audiobooks, because I'm the same way, I love audiobooks, but I'm hesitant to listen to certain things if I know I'm going to take a lot of notes on it, because it's not really the most efficient way to do it. But one thing that I have done with certain books, and again, it's an added cost, is that if you do your audiobook, you buy the audiobook through Audible, and if you buy the ebook before,
you have to do it before
you start listening. Yeah, that's the only thing I thought, like, oh, if I decide I want to do this, then this will work. But really, basically what happens is, as you're doing those clips do show up then in the ebook as markers. Now, it's a little more of a pain, because then what you have to do is you go to those clips and then you're like, well, why did I put a clip here? And then you can sort of scan that page and you're like, ah, that was what I wanted to remember. And then you can go and highlight it with your finger, and then it's just acts as a regular highlight. And I've done that with a couple books, and that's effective. But the only, I wish they let you do that after the fact, meaning I wish you can listen to an audiobook, take all those clips, then if you decide, oh, I took enough clips where it's worthwhile, buy the ebook, and then all that stuff appears. But what I noticed is that if you don't buy the ebook from the outset, it doesn't put those clips in. You have to buy them both before you start, which is kind of a pain, because I don't know if I'm going to take that many
notes. Right.
Some certain, yeah, certainly fiction, I don't tend to take. Sometimes I do, but certain kind of histories, I don't. But if it's a book that I know I'm going to take a lot of notes on, I'm really hesitant to listen to the audiobook.
And I've done that. I've taken, you know, I'll get the, if it says, you know, buy the ebook and get the audiobook for $9 more or whatever it is, I've done that. I still prefer, if I'm taking notes, I still prefer like the printed book, because of the way I take notes. Ebook, I mean, and now, you know, in the Kindle app, you can highlight in different colors and stuff like that. But I like being able to see what I write. I like the rendering of the page in front of me and seeing my marginal notes. And sometimes I'll have things in blue, and sometimes I'll have things in red. Sometimes I'll circle a passage instead of underlining it. So if the Kindle app ever changed in a way that allowed you to see your notes sort of in line the way you would on a printed page, I think I'd like it better, but it's certainly better than the clips in Audible.
Yeah, I hear you. Patrick, what are your thoughts on some of this in terms of, I know you were cringing when Jamie, we were talking about writing in your book. So what are your thoughts on writing in the book, rereading, all that kind of stuff?
Well, I reread all the time. I've right. done that a lot, but yeah, as far as writing in books, that just horrifies me.
Do you like the books as objects, as collectibles?
To me, books are art.
Okay.
So yeah, you know, you wouldn't get a painting from an artist and hang it up on your wall and then write notes along the edge of when you got it and what it means to you and what these colors look like and what they inspire in you. You wouldn't do that to a painting. So yeah, I just can't imagine doing that to a book.
Would you do the collectible action figure thing of buying two versions of a book, like one to mark up and one to, you know, keep in the package?
You see, the funny thing is I have bought two versions of books, one to read, one to keep.
Okay.
I've done that with comics. That was a common thing that people do
right.
with comics.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You'd buy one, and you'd you'd basically have the comic store, the comic shop, bag and board it for you. Mm-hmm. And then you'd have the second one that you could read. So I have done that in the past.
Right. That was the greatest.
No, I get the whole the books as art. And I mean, sometimes if I have like I have a bunch of Cemetery Dance collector edition Stephen King books that I wouldn't dream of writing in, or if I have signed books, I probably am not going to write in those. But I also see books as tools, that sort of repositories for information, and my notes are just adding information to that, so I have no problem. I kind of go back to, you know, John Adams, Thomas Jefferson, those kinds of folks, and even back before them, who was it? John Locke and others, the commonplace book type stuff that they did. And they talk often about, you know, writing in their books, and books were probably even more precious back then. But that's where a lot of that comes from, is for me anyway, is, you know, reading those guys and being like, oh, hey, yeah, I could. Nobody in school ever told me it's okay to write in a book, but sure, I could do that. I could, it's convenient to have it there. I just never thought of it as damaging the book. If nothing else, it's adding something to it. Maybe nothing particularly valuable to anybody but me, but it's still adding something to it.
Well, and one of the most annoying things for me when I get an ebook is when Kindle highlights things and says, you know, this is the most highlighted passage in this book, or this is the most commented thing in this book. I have to turn all that shit off because I don't care, and I don't want it. It's all it does is distract me and take me out of reading. I don't want to be taken out of reading. If I'm reading a book, I want to read the book. I don't want to know that, you know, 4 million people highlighted this section. Good for them.
Right. Yeah. Well, you could turn that off though.
That's what I have to do every single time.
Yeah. If really, there's not a. I feel like in my Kindle, there's like you either have that on or off, and it's either always on or always off. But maybe I might have a different Kindle version than you do. I'm not sure. I think for me, it's one of the reasons you're talking about marking up your books. It's I used to read a lot from the library, and I don't really anymore for that reason, because I want to be able to take notes. I want to be able to do highlights. And it kind of holds me back when I read a book from the library. I still utilize my library a lot. What I tend to do nowadays is if there is a book that I'm interested in, maybe I'll take it out just to kind of get a little bit more of an idea of if it's something that is that I would benefit or enjoy reading. You know, it's hard to get that just from reading reviews and stuff. Sometimes you really actually do want to hold the book in your hand and really dig into it a little bit, whether you start reading it or not, but just to kind of see if it's like, oh yeah, this is a good one. And I especially noticed that, you know, talking about ebooks, with a lot of older books or older writings that maybe are some sort of public domain, boy, the quality on that can vary greatly. You know, yeah, talking about like the Stoicism, I bought an ebook of The Discourses by Epictetus, and I bought an ebook version, and it was not expensive. I mean, maybe it was $2 to $5. I don't know, something like that, enough where it wasn't much to pull the trigger on. I was reading it for a day or two, and I'm like, I don't understand any of this. And I don't think it's because what they're trying to say is good. I just think this translation is horrible. And maybe it could have been something where, you know, maybe they took the original Latin and ran it through, you know, some Google translate and just printed it, and it just doesn't make any sense. Or so you got to watch out with the ebooks of that sort of thing, because you may get a really bad version, or just even like the formatting could be horrible or something. So what I've with that kind of stuff, I definitely will take that stuff out of the library, because if it's printed, it's probably going to be a lot better than an ebook. It's not just some fly by night operation, just grabbing up public domain things and just spitting them out to try to make a couple dollars. If some reputable publishing company went through the trouble of printing it, it's probably going to be pretty good. So I've learned a lesson with that to maybe lean more towards the print books of that, or at least make sure you're getting that edition in the ebook, rather than just some fly by night thing. Cause I've been burned a couple times with that for sure. Jamie, have you had experience with that kind of thing too?
I've seen that. Yeah, there was, I'm trying to remember what book was it that there was, some of Theodore Roosevelt's writings when he was out West that I got interested in after reading, biography. I can't think of his name now, but he did the 3-volume biography of Roosevelt. And I got the eBooks, and it was very much like you say. It was almost like, you know, there's no good paragraph breaks, and yeah. You know, it's kind of messy. But I wanted to go back for a second to when you mentioned libraries, because another plug for the libraries. One thing I do, it's maybe similar, is sometimes a book is really hard to find, particularly for some of the books that I, you know, when I kind of going through this butterfly effect, and it's like I was reading a year or so ago Simon Winchester's book on Joseph Needham, who wrote, it was basically a book about how he wrote this series of books called Science and Civilization in China. And it sounds like a fascinating series of books. And they're basically only available through, like, I forget if it's Oxford or Cambridge University Press, and they're like $400 per volume, and there's like countless volumes. And going to the library and seeing if there's something like that available at the library to check out and being able to read it that way, that I'm perfectly cool with. I'm not going to write in those books, but what I will do is I will have a notebook and just, you know, any passages that I would normally highlight or something, I just, you know, copy into the notebook and then type up later on or something. So books that are not readily available, there was a Stephen Ambrose did a 3-volume biography of Richard Nixon I read years ago, and I couldn't find those books anywhere at the time, but they were available in the library. So, you know, another great reason for libraries is, you know, they tend to keep those books around, right, and make them available.
Yeah. Yeah. Patrick, how do you go about, you know, choosing your next book? You know, Jamie's talking about this butterfly effect, and I think I have a kind of a similar methodology. I tend to read books that are either, especially when you're doing nonfiction, quite often within that nonfiction book, they're citing sources from other books. So if there's a particular area that you're interested in, a lot of times you'll get your next book because there'll be 30 books mentioned in the one that you're reading that you then may go down that path. So Patrick, I know you're more of a fiction reader, but how do you tend to choose your next book?
That's really difficult for me. I mean, literally it's difficult for me to choose the next book I'm going to read because I don't want it to suck. Right. And I've been burned. Mm-hmm. So, I tend to not like recommendations. So Jamie was talking about how people will say, "Oh, you're a science fiction person. You should watch this movie, or you should read this book, or you should blah blah blah." I hate that. Mm. I don't know why. It's like that's the easiest way to get me not to want to read something.
You trust in your ability is what it is. I mean, you trust in your ability to know what you like better than anybody else.
Yeah, and I know a lot of people rely on those kind of recommendations, and that's great. That's fine. You know, I'm happy that works for them. But I've had too many people say, "Oh, you should read this book," and then I start to read it, and it's terrible, and I don't want anything to do with it. And so I don't do that anymore. Typically, I get sucked into a genre for a little while. Like I had a lot of people recommend Leviathan Wakes to me, and I resisted it for the longest time. And you know, it took a couple of years before I finally just decided on my own that I wanted to read it, and then I liked it a lot, and then that led me to look for other kinds of space opera and science fiction that was, you know, sort of, what do they call it, near future, because it's only a couple hundred years away kind of thing, and then I just kind of went down that path and found some other stuff, and I would typically I see names that I've heard of and I've heard people speak kindly of, and I also look for series. I don't like one-shot books. I know that there are a lot of people who do. I don't. I want the characters to go on and continue, and so I typically look for something that where they have more than one book out.
Well, and that, you know, what we're not mentioning, or maybe we did, is that it's not even a, you know, there's a financial cost, but probably even more important, there's a time cost to all of this. So yeah, it sounds like, you know, we're expressing trepidation in like, what do we pick next? Like, oh, it's important. Like, it's like, really, guys, you're like, it's that big of a deal, but it's like, you don't want to start committing to something and then you realize, I don't think this is very good. And I'm not great about bailing on stuff. So it's probably because it's even, you know, you can put it towards television shows too. You know, there's, as Patrick and I often talk about, there's so much good stuff out there that you want to make sure you pick what you're going to enjoy or get something out of the most, because if you commit to watching a season of television, that's like a week of your life or more. And if it takes you two or three episodes to even decide whether you like it, and then half the time you're like, well, I made it this far, I might as well blow through it now. And then you realize, like, I'm watching TV as a sort of chore. And TV should not be a chore. You should just sit back and enjoy it and hopefully get something out of it. But I'm always very careful about what I pick next. I don't know if you feel the same way with your TV shows, Patrick.
I do. Yeah. Because there's, again, you never know what's going to happen, right? And and I have easily 100 shows in my Netflix queue.
Mm-hmm.
And every time I sit down on Netflix, I go looking for something different. And I don't go into my queue, right? I start looking to see what's new, what's trending, what are other people watching, you know, and I know that something's coming. Like I couldn't wait for Daredevil season 3. I was so excited, and so as soon as I got back from Kentucky and Mile High Con stuff, I binged that sucker and watched it as quickly as possible. And now I just started Sabrina. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah, Jamie, do you watch much TV at all, or are you mostly a reader these days?
I'm mostly a reader. My wife has been watching Haven, and so I've caught some of those episodes, and I'll turn to her and point out, oh, look, Doors on a beach. It's from, you know, The Dark Tower, or oh, that's from It, or that's from. But otherwise, yeah, I mean, I'm reading while she's doing that. So,
right. Right. Yeah. Well, like I said, it's a time investment, whether it's reading or not. And I'm trying to, in the past year, I've bailed on maybe two or three books. So I'm trying to trust myself. Cause again, with the bailing on the books, especially, is this just a challenging read, or is it not very good or not for me? Because sometimes you got to break through the challenge of reading it, and like really, maybe it takes 100, 200 pages to get into rhythm with the author. And a lot of books that I found very challenging to read ended up having the biggest impact on me. But I've learned to trust if a book is just not for me, or if it's, I forget what book it was some kind of nonfiction book. And I just realized that this book was this particular author just talking about themselves and about their accomplishments and stuff. And I'm like, I'm not getting anything out of this. This is just this author bragging about how awesome they are. And I made it maybe 40 pages into it. And I'm just like, you know what? I'm bailing on this. I don't like it at all. It's, you know, so I'm trusting myself more these days with that. But
I think, I think that's, for me, that's key is over. Like, I don't rate books. Like, I keep a list of the books I read. I don't keep a list of the books that I didn't finish, but I do mark a book as something I would recommend if somebody asked me. Like, I don't go around recommending unless somebody asked me, but it's a book, like if I would reread it or I would recommend it to somebody else, I'll make a little notation. And what I found is, you know, in the last couple of years, last 4 or 5 years, there are many more of those books than there were previously. And I think it's because I'm getting better at knowing what I like and what I don't like.
Right.
in some cases, that's not ideal. I mean, you know, if you don't know what you don't like, then you're going to miss some things, maybe. You know, you're sort of boxing yourself in a little bit there. It's worked out pretty well.
Cool. All right, everybody. Well, we are out of time. Once again, Jamie Todd Rubin. You can follow him on Twitter at JamieTR. You can go to his website, jamierubin.net. Is that where your blog is located?
That is.
Is it at your website?
Yep, it's there.
Yeah, so Jamie, JAMIE, Rubin, RUBIN.net. I highly recommend it. He writes great articles that make me think. And so if you like the conversation that you just heard, I think you would enjoy Jamie's blog. So go and subscribe to that sucker. Jamie, anything else going on you want to let our listeners know about?
You know, I wish there was. I wish there was. I wish I was kind of doing more writing than I am, but the blog is it for now.
Cool. Well, I think that's you are creating a valuable resource for folks like me. So I do appreciate it. And I think it's worth our listeners' time to go and check out. So everybody go and do that. For us, once again, if you dig what you're hearing, consider going over to patreon.com/functionalnerds to become one of our backers. And Patrick, what do you want to let our listeners know as we go today?
I got nothing.
Okay. You know, hey, some weeks you got nothing. It's fine.
Yeah.
It's fine. All right, everybody. Have a great week and we'll see you next time.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Mo.
I'd like to say thank you on behalf of the group and ourselves. I hope we pass the audition.
Still here? It's over. Go home. Go.
Would you like a chili, baby?
I'm the one in the middle.